Greetings, colleagues. I'm talking to you at the moment in Cambridge in September, but I hope that you're in Kazakhstan and it's October. So I'm very privileged and honoured to be speaking to you as part of your programme. I've been asked to speak about our experience of networking, and I draw upon my experience in the HeartScan network, and you'll see the logo in the top right-hand of the first slide, and also from similar activities in the International Teacher Leadership Project, which you see the logo on the left hand at the bottom. So let me begin to unpack this idea of how teachers can be enabled to build their knowledge through networking. I base my thinking on this diagram, which is part of an article that I've recently published. And you can see at the top that the conceptual framework focuses on teacher leadership. And we've developed over some years the notion that in order to build professional knowledge, teachers need to lead change, to lead development projects, to learn through doing that, and to create knowledge. So the knowledge they create is rooted in practice. But of course, that has to be linked to some kind of understanding about how knowledge building takes place, which is on the left-hand side at the bottom, and also to consider how the culture of the school, the professional culture of the school, enables the teachers to in fact engage in that practical development work. I won't say any more about that at the moment, but you might like to read the article which explains in more detail how this idea works. Okay. So let me just consider for a moment, what kind of professional knowledge are we talking about? So teachers building professional knowledge through networking. What do I mean by professional knowledge? Well, first of all, I have to say that it is not simple. It's multifaceted, it's complex, and it's not always consciously articulated. But I can say something about what I think professional knowledge includes. So, features such as this. First of all, knowing what to teach. Fairly obvious, I guess. But this is about knowing your subject, knowing what it is you're trying to achieve, knowing what it is you want the students to learn. Secondly, it's about knowing how to teach, the skills of classroom management, the skills involved in enabling other people to learn in the classroom. This is the process, the pedagogy, if you like. We have to really understand that. And thirdly, knowing how to create the conditions that enable students to learn. This may be about how we enable them to work together in groups. It may be about how we enable them to develop study skills, to use resources. It may be about how we have to attend to their dispositions in order that they're in a state of mind to learn. But the conditions for learning, we need to understand and know something about that. Fourthly, knowing how students learn and what prevents them from learning. We need to understand something about not only the cognitive processes, but also the emotional and social dimensions of what happens in classrooms. How do students learn, and how is it that they sometimes can't learn? We need to understand that. Fifth, we need to know how to assess students' learning. This is a quite well-developed skill, I think, for teachers, to be able to know really how students are learning and what they're learning and to what extent they're learning. And that's something we need to generate professional knowledge about. Six, knowing how to respond to opportunities and problems as they arise. Now, the wonders of being a professional surely are that we know our business so well that we can respond to that unexpected event, you know, a particular piece of behaviour in a classroom, for example, or a student's particular difficulties in response to a learning task that we give them. Or perhaps it's knowing how to talk to parents about a problem that arises. So this is about being able to respond. That's part of professional knowledge. Now, overall, for us in HeartScan, the overarching, most important thing is to know how to develop that professional knowledge, knowing how to design, manage, and lead a process of change and improvement, in other words, of development, which extends professional knowledge. So that is a skill in itself, the idea that you develop an understanding about how to engage in that process of building knowledge by development work in school. So for me, professional knowledge encompasses all of those things, and of course, a lot more. So in HeartScan, what we're trying to do is to enable the teachers to grow their own capacity to design, manage, and lead development work in order to feed into a process of knowledge building throughout the network. This is what we refer to in shorthand as teacher leadership. So how do we support that? At the centre of it is the idea of teacher-led development work projects. In other words, we expect teachers and we help the teachers to design a project that has a beginning and an end and some coherent purpose to it. But what is it that helps them to do that? Well, first of all, a programme of support. So teachers in our network will participate in a programme, whether it be the teacher-led development work programme or the master's programme in leading teaching and learning. They're all concerned with leading a project, but with the support of those programmes. And those programmes enable them to reflect on what they're doing, to plan what they're doing, and to share with other people, to engage in dialogue. So that's key. They belong to a programme. Secondly, they have tools that have been built and developed and refined over many years to support them in reflecting and planning and sharing what they do. So it's one thing to have a programme, but you know, it's another thing to have the detailed tools to help the teachers to actually make their own plans and to reflect on them. Thirdly, as indicated earlier, we need to cultivate the professional cultures in school which enable teachers to engage in teacher-led development work. If the school environment itself does not allow them the space, does not respect and recognise their contribution, then of course they won't be successful. Fourth, and this is really coming to the focus of this talk, we need to provide opportunities for networking beyond their own school. So, of course, they can network within the school, but key, I think, is to enable those teachers to share their knowledge and engage in knowledge building with other teachers in other schools, perhaps within the region. So there are four dimensions, I think, to how we can support what I'm calling teacher leadership through teacher-led development work projects. So let me tell you a little bit about how we focus on that last of those four things. In other words, the opportunities for networking, because I think that's really what you're most interested in today. So we have these different dimensions, if you like, to providing these networking opportunities. We have a newsletter, the HeartScan Voice newsletter. We have a teacher leadership journal. We have a database where we collect information about all our network members and publish that. We have an annual conference. And lastly, we have a series of network events around six every year. So I want to say something about each of those things. The newsletter then. First of all, you see on the screen a little extract, the front page of one of our issues of the newsletter. We call it the HeartScan Voice. And you'll see the editorial there, which is usually written by myself. This document runs to about 8 pages, sometimes a little more, 10, 12 pages, certainly never more than that. Let me just focus on the detail of that text on the front page. This is an extract from that particular issue. It says, "Those of you who have become seriously disenchanted with the Big Mac, you know the Big Mac, the quick fix approach to hunger, may have discovered the slow food movement. According to that, their website, they are a grassroots association committed to such things as creativity, collaboration, sustainability and harmony. Is this ringing any bells for you? I think HeartScan embraces a similar set of values. When it all began in 1999, it was just 20 teachers wanting to extend their own professional knowledge. More than 12 years later, many hundreds of teachers in Hertfordshire belong to a vibrant network whose members lead development projects in their schools. Currently, we have over 150 members registered for either the TLDW programme or the MED in leading teaching and learning. And we build our knowledge of teacher leadership and of how to improve what happens in classrooms by coming together at network events to share our experience. The professional knowledge we create together is tried and tested. It's practical, but infused with rigour and critical analysis. So it's very important that we say this kind of thing in our newsletter because it reinforces a set of beliefs about what we as a network are doing. We take the opportunity within the newsletter and at other times to remind people of what we stand for and the values and ideas we share. Okay, so here's another page from the HeartScan newsletter, the HeartScan Voice. And as you see, this one is with rather pleasant, I think you'd say, photographs and images. It's portraying the network event that happened a few weeks before this newsletter was published. And you see there a picture of young Tom Murphy in the bottom left. He is playing host. He's a teacher, quite a young teacher, at Sir John Law's School, and he is acting as host for the network event. In the other photograph there, you see one of the teachers who has put on a display showing his project. And in the bottom right, you see an image of this device that they use, this picture of the hand, where people were asked to write in the finger spaces comments about their project. And here you have an example of somebody saying, "I have been inspired by passionate teachers acting and thinking in ways to make a real difference to their students." So that's what one of the teachers wrote along the finger of the hand, this cardboard hand they've been given. So there we share not only the detail of what teachers are doing, but the process of the network events. We have an example of the beginning of a story. So our newsletter contains brief accounts of teachers' development projects. This one also included a discussion of the impact of the project, and the teachers' contact details were added to encourage network members to get in touch with Eleanor, who is the teacher concerned, so that they can have exchange more detailed information and have some dialogue. It's an interesting project. You see Eleanor there. She decided to encourage her students. She would sit the exam, the very same exam that they were sitting, and then she would challenge her students to try to do better than she did herself. Really interesting project. You might want to read some more about that in the journal. That's why we come to the journal. So we started producing a journal a few years ago. The journal launched by HeartScan, but it's now more international. So the latest issue I have in my hand here, this one is not yet on the web yet, but the rest you can find on our website. But here we have a story, for example, about a teacher's project in Athens, in Greece, as well as others in London and others in Hertfordshire. So I hope in the future we'll be able to include stories of teacher leadership from Kazakhstan. I do hope so. So there are just images on the screen there of two issues of our journal. I think we possibly have about eight altogether. And all of those stories in the journal and the articles you can download and read for yourselves. We carry both articles written by the teachers themselves and short stories written by editors, people like myself. So our editorial approach is interesting to think about. If you want to collect stories about teachers' projects, for us it's important to have a tight editorial approach. We don't invite teachers just to send anything in. It isn't necessarily the case, I think, that teachers are naturally skilled at doing that kind of writing. So we don't invite people just to send material in, and we certainly never reject material because we commission articles from them. We actually say, that would make an interesting article. Could we have an article from you on that? And then, as editors, we work closely with the teacher to produce the articles which reflect the core values of the network. For the stories, much shorter stories, maybe 2 pages, 3 pages, we select the projects. And we again say to the teacher, would you mind if we write a story about your project? Mostly, in fact, every time, the teachers always feel very honoured by this and very pleased. And we've never had someone be disappointed with the material that we've published about their projects. So it's a way of dignifying and celebrating and recognising their wonderful achievement as teachers to lead these projects and to share their knowledge more widely. We also have a database. The Heartscam database is a complicated document, as you can imagine, because we have many hundreds of entries in it. But what we do with every teacher that joins the network, we ask them to fill in a form which describes their professional concern. So we ask them to identify the agenda for change, if you like. What is it they want to do something about? What do they want to make a difference to? And as they begin to develop their project, we ask them to put in a little entry about the nature of the project, how it works, how it unfolds, some of the key problems that they face. And then we can collect that information, and then when other teachers want to know, well, who else has been doing a project about this or that? So that teacher can look up down the list and say, ah, that looks interesting. I will contact that teacher and ask them to share more details about their project. It's also very handy at the network events for teachers to know that so-and-so is in the room, such and such a teacher that maybe I've never met. I want to meet them because their work is rather along the similar lines to my own. So we encourage people to get in touch with each other and to follow up their conversations on the basis of the information in the database. On to the annual conference. I think it's very important to have an annual conference, a big event that's very high profile, a big celebration for the network. Actually, we have two big events in the year. We have, and I should have perhaps listed this, we have an annual dinner at a Cambridge college, at my own college, at Wolfson College, where we had one just last week, and about 120 people came. And they all dined together in the dining room, and it was a very celebratory occasion, and there was dancing afterwards and so on. But the other big occasion is the Heartscam Annual Conference. This is usually in the spring, March, April, something like that, and all the network members are asked to attend the conference, so it's quite a large crowd, 200 and so on we usually get. We have obviously need a large building, we need refreshments. You know, there may be cakes and drinks, tea, coffee, and so on. And therefore, the third point on my list, we have to cover the costs, and we have sponsorship. So we have a relationship with a local business. They produce software, IT products, and they make a short speech, advertising, publicising their company. In return, they pay for all of the expenses for the conference, which we think is a very nice arrangement. So we have a registration desk. You can imagine it's quite challenging to organise an event, but the staffing for the desk are all members of our tutor team. In other words, these are teachers who lead teacher-led development work groups, and they organise the conferences, they organise the network events, and they're staffing the desk, asking people to sign in, giving them their papers, giving them their programme for the evening. So I'll say a little bit more about that later on. You will find at these events there are posters and displays. Teachers will come in early and put up very interesting posters to depict their projects. Of course, we have technological challenges. We have to have microphones for everybody, particularly if people are speaking from the floor. We have to have a system of running around, handing out microphones so that people can contribute their comments. And we have to have a really good projection screen and lighting and so on. And we always have several keynote speakers. And you can imagine the difficulty where all those speakers have to arrive, bring their PowerPoint presentation or whatever. Sometimes they want to show a bit of video and so forth. So it's a technological challenge. So we always look for some kind of expertise to have some support from somebody who understands these things. And we always have at our conferences a kind of networking activity in the middle where all the teachers can get up and talk to each other and look at posters together and have some discussion about their projects. This is just the slide we used last March. Robertson House is it's owned by the government, really. It's a local professional development centre. Okay. So This is a, I don't know whether you can see this picture clearly, but here's one of our tutor team, Tom Murphy. He's a science teacher. He led a TLDW group in his school. And he's introducing the next speaker. So instead of having a single person who is a, a master of ceremonies, say, we have a different person will come up and introduce the next speaker. So here, Tom is getting up to introduce Caroline, who is also a member of the tutor team. And then Caroline, there she is, she makes a 15-minute presentation all about teacher leadership to try to inspire the others and encourage them. And she uses a very nice PowerPoint presentation there to give her talk. And we probably had, I don't know, maybe three or four such keynote addresses, mostly from teachers. One rather exciting talk also from a colleague from Belgrade who also supports teacher leadership in the Balkans, and she came to tell us how influential HeartScan had been in the Balkan countries that she was familiar with. And I think that made the people in HeartScan, the teachers in HeartScan, feel very proud that they'd been able to influence other people. Here, an interesting development this year, one of the members of our tutor team, who is a deputy head teacher in a primary school, she brought a group of her young students. So these children are only 7, 8 years old or so, and they got onto the stage and they introduced the networking activity. They explained to all the teachers present, 200 teachers, how they should now go about sharing their knowledge and discussing their projects together. That was a really quite a triumph, and we were very appreciative of what the young students did. HeartScan network events, these are more frequent. So we have one annual conference, but several. This year we will have 6 HeartScan network events. The important point here is that they are spread around the region. We will look at a map of the region, and we'll say, OK, we need one over this end of the region and another one over this end and another one up here and another one down here. So we spread them around so that members of the network can choose which ones to go to. Some of them will be too far away for them to drive to at the end of a school day. So our network events tend to take place after the end of the teaching day. So it might be, for us, around 4:30 in the afternoon. And they need to drive from where they teach to the network event. So we spread around the district, if you like, so that people can access at least 2 of those network events each year. So the second point, they are organised by people in the school. So within each of the schools in the network, they will run their own teacher-led development work programme, and so a committee within that school, a group within that school, will actually organise the network event. But we have a network manager, and we send the network manager to see the team in the school, and she gives them support in planning the network event. So we have, of course, to plan who will lead the workshops, and it's quite complicated. So there will be many, many teachers leading workshops, putting up posters, and we have to plan that in advance. So there's a lot of emailing and negotiating about who will contribute and what's the title of their contribution and so forth. And then we can produce a programme. I have an example here. So this is the sort of document we're talking about. It lists all the workshops. If I open it for you, it, for example, has a programme here where it lists all the different workshops. I don't know whether you can see that. So there are 1 session, 2 sessions, 3 sessions, and many workshops within each session. So all the people that come to the event have a choice of several short workshops. They may last for 30 minutes. So they'll go to one, and then they'll choose another one, and then choose a third one, sometimes perhaps even a fourth one. So we have a programme that people receive as soon as they arrive, listing all these workshops. Now, the event usually begins with a welcome speech. So we would have a speech by the head teacher, for example. Quite typical, the head teacher would be the first person to speak and would say, "Welcome to our school. We're so proud that we have this event in our school tonight. And, you know, I hope you have a really useful and enjoyable time in our school." And then we might have a warm-up activity. So, you know, people have been working and teaching all day. They need something just to break the ice. So it might be a speed dating activity, for example. Somebody might pop up and say, OK, you've got to say these three things to at least two new people, and I'm going to blow the whistle after 5 minutes, and then you've got to go and speak to somebody else, and so on. And it's a lot of fun. So people move quickly around the room, meeting lots of people, and, you know, it's enjoyable and it's amusing and it makes people feel more relaxed. And they learn something very quickly about other people's projects. There might be a theme I've listed here, for example, a light bulb moment. So at one of our events, the host said, on your chair you will find a cardboard cutout of a light bulb. And during the evening, you have to write on the light bulb a little statement saying, something that inspired me this evening was, and then they have to write something about somebody they've met, some project they've heard about, an idea that had just come to them. And then they have to put these light bulbs into a box at the end of the evening, and then we draw out and give a prize to the first three or something like that. So there's an activity around a theme, like a light bulb. There are all sorts of different ideas. And then at the end, there will be a closing speech, and that's very often myself. I'm asked to make some comment about the evening, about how much I've enjoyed it, about how important and useful it's been to hear of these different projects and to see teachers building their knowledge together. So that's typically how our network event would work. And we do that 6 times a year. We'll be doing that this year, 6 times, in addition to our annual conference. So you can see there in the boxes in red, this was last year, you can see we had, five network events, and we had the annual conference. We're going to have one more this year. And you can see how this diagram represents how the different teacher-led development work groups based in the school are scattered around the region, and then you can see how the network events themselves are also scattered around the region. This means that we can reach out to everybody and include everybody in the discussion at one point or another during the year. This is a typical scene at a network event. Now, here you see there's a gentleman on the left-hand side of the screen, and he's the head teacher at a high school. And you can see there are posters have been put up behind him. But he's talking to Val Hill. She's one of the HeartsCam team. She's the person organising this event. And so he's saying to her, OK, hi, Val, what do you want me to say? What's my role? And she says, OK, Chris, you've got 3 minutes. You've just got to say something welcoming, say that, you know, it's a great pleasure to have people here, etc., etc. So she gives him his instructions. And, of course, he performs his duty wonderfully, rather like the Queen does. So, and at this event, Val made a wonderful speech. So she's the assistant head teacher, HeartsCam member, and she made a welcoming speech. And this is what she said. I think this is an inspiring speech. She said, HeartsCam is a rare thing in our profession. It inspires, supports, and creates opportunities for educators of every kind, a fact which is being increasingly recognised in our own country and abroad. Its power comes from the fact that it doesn't work on a deficit model of professional development. It doesn't assume that those who educate children need fixing. Instead, it encourages every teacher to feel that their school is an exciting place, somewhere that they can make a difference and build into a better place for students they care about. So what it creates is a learning community. What events like tonight's offer is an opportunity to bring out the tacit knowledge each of us have accrued. It provides the nudge to share, to reflect, and to build on what we might half know, feel instinctively, or want to embrace, because it chimes with our values. This isn't about fixing, it's about liberating knowledge and creating new shared understandings. That's why it's powerful, and that's why I'm proud to be part of it. It was a very inspiring speech. It was longer than that, of course, but you can see the kinds of things that Val was saying. And of course, this puts everybody in the right frame of mind to then go and learn from their colleagues in the workshops to follow. Here's the same picture of Val with her speech and the posters. But you'll see in the left hand, at the bottom left hand there, one of the workshops. So one of the teachers in a different school has come to lead a workshop. And she has around the table there with her a number of other teachers from different schools who are interested in her topic. I think she was talking there about how she had developed a coaching scheme in her school. And those other teachers were also interested in that. So she presented her project, and they compared and discussed and asked questions and made suggestions from their own experience. Here, another typical activity, a tabletop discussion activity, enables teachers to share an account of her work and to show materials. So if you're just all sitting around the same table, you can hold things up and you can point to things and you can have a very intimate discussion. So that's very often what happens at network events. This shot here is of just two teachers talking together about a poster. So that one teacher has put up a poster on the wall and the other teacher is coming to talk to her about that. This is really getting to the heart of it. It's about dialogue. It's about dialogue about projects. And this is what we're trying to engender in the networking. We're trying to get people to engage in dialogue, where they compare, where they offer critical friendship, where they explain, and so on. So the tacit knowledge moves from being tacit to being explicit. Here you see shots of two typical workshops led by teachers. In both cases, a teacher is making a presentation, but inviting colleagues to discuss her work. Again, they're bringing their experience, their wisdom, their expertise to her idea, and they're all emerging with a better understanding than they had when they started. So they're building knowledge together. Another technique, which is quite typical at network events, is this. Here a teacher has asked other participants to write post-it notes on her poster to give her new ideas and raise challenging questions. So you can see there the little yellow post-it notes, which the teachers have stuck onto her poster so that they can ask her some challenging questions and make suggestions to her. That was a very useful exercise. And of course, they will perhaps come round and discuss with her as well. This is an interesting technique we saw at the last network event we had, I think, where the organisers in the school had made this tree out of, I don't know, cardboard and so on. And the leaves on the tree, so each tree contains the comments of a teacher about their experience at other network events. So you can just about see the names of the schools on the trunk of the tree and the branches of the tree where the network events had taken place before. These comments were most interesting. So you can see there's a sense of accumulating wisdom about how we do networking. So we like to learn from one network event and feed that learning into the next network event so that we get better and better at doing networking, at inspiring each other and building knowledge together. Let me just concentrate for a moment on what I think we're actually transferring when we do networking. This is, I think, contentious because some people would say, and I've heard it said in this country by policymakers, that teachers, when they get together to share in this way, all they're doing is celebrating rather than challenging. I've heard it said that the problem is that it's not a critical process, that teachers just want to kind of clap and pat each other on the back and say, oh, jolly well done, that's excellent. Whereas what we're talking about, I think, is much more than that. So it is, of course, a passing on of information about what works, as they say. So that's skills and information, you know, knowledge about how to do this, how to do that. But it's also, on the left there you see, it's also about mutual encouragement. This is about inspiring people. It's about establishing the idea that together we can do things. So if you belong to a community, you belong to a network, and you hear stories about what people in that network have achieved, you have the feeling that, well, people like us can achieve this sort of thing. In the In the research literature, it's referred to as collective self-efficacy, right? That belief that we can do this sort of thing. So it actually increases people's sense of what they can achieve. So this mutual encouragement leading to collective self-efficacy. And I think there's a third thing that we do too, and here on the right-hand side. I refer to it as the moral purpose virus. In other words, people go to these events and they tell these stories. You could regard them, I think, as sort of parables. And that's a word that I learnt as a child from being taught about the Bible. So it has a sort of a religious overtone to it. But really, a parable is a story which has a set of values embedded in it. And I think that's what we're doing when we go to these events. We're telling stories that pass on a set of values. We inspire other people to do good things because that story inspires us and makes us think about our own values. A very interesting example I saw actually in a school in Bulgaria where a teacher was talking about the problem of trying to include a group of Roma children who had been sent to the school. And these children had been excluded from schooling before. They were virtually illiterate. And the teacher talked about how she and her colleagues had constructed a special program for these children. But the program was interesting, the techniques, the tools, very interesting. But what was really inspiring was the way she talked about the moral question that somebody should have provided education for these children. We really ought to do something about this. We really ought to include these children in the education system. And that moral message was what really counted. So knowledge building in this social context, which is the network, it can't be separated from the nurturing of values and dispositions. So knowledge and values and dispositions go together in this way of knowledge building. Let me just try to give you an idea, an example, if you like, of how this activity makes people feel. We collected testimony from networks that we've been involved in, we've been supporting in many different countries. And here we had a report from our colleagues in Bosnia and Herzegovina. And they had quoted one of the teachers from one of the schools in the network, in their network, who said this. And I was very fortunate. I went to Sarajevo and I met this teacher and discussed this with her. But this is what she said as part of the research. She said, "I caught myself participating in discussions with all my heart, getting excited about the most ordinary talk between colleagues from our school and the colleagues from Krasno, which I think is another school in the region, exchanging ideas, listening to each other with respect, giving support to each other. One gets tremendous self-esteem, and that is all I need. So I managed to go beyond the limits of my previous work. I set my goals on a higher level. Having seen the results of what I had initiated with my ideas in cooperation with my colleagues, I am encouraged to make new ways to continue something that improves the quality of work with children, which encourages me personally, thereby making me happier." Now that seems to me to be an excellent way to think about the relationship between improving schools by building knowledge together and giving all the teachers concerned a sense of self-efficacy and well-being. This person is more satisfied as a professional because she's been able to engage in this kind of knowledge building process. And I picked this up at the event in Bulgaria, and I think this sums up really our approach to networking, because the network events are not organised by me or by the university or by the government. They're organised by the teachers themselves. And when I went to an event in Bulgaria, the teachers and the children had made this postcard, which they gave to me, and it has this slogan, "We are not waiting for Superman." They are doing it themselves. And I think that's a powerful message. What that suggests is that colleagues there have been able to empower the teachers to work on their own knowledge, but also to organise the conditions which allow them to build knowledge together. So just to return briefly to my theoretical perspective, if you like, it's about connecting teacher leadership and the way teachers can build practical knowledge with some kind of understanding about how school cultures can enable them to do that, with the idea that they can come together in networks, in communities, to build knowledge together. And of course, I do think that one slight worry that people might have is, well, is the knowledge worthwhile? Is it good knowledge? Well, I think that's where the university has a role to play. I think the university's job is to be involved in those networks, to try to enrich the discourse. And we're fortunate because we have a master's program at the heart of the network. And so the teachers on the master's program, of course, are studying at a high level. And that means that we're able to enrich the discussions that go on in the network events with research-based and ideas based on the scholarly activity of those master's students. So I think that's how the university can play a part in enriching the discourse. If you want to read more about that, I would obviously urge you to have a look at my article recently published in the journal, Professional Development in Education. And I hope that you can find that easily, but please let me know. I'm happy to make that easier for you. So thank you very much for your attention. It's been a pleasure to share with you our experience of networking. And I hope to meet some of you again soon and to talk to you face to face. Thank you.